The call parenting starts in the home, and what I'm going to do each week is address a particular topic having to do with parenting. I had done a series last fall called Hypocrisy in the Home, and so this is kind of this is basically 1 week on that right now, sort of talking about that. And I'll get to a little bit more later, but the heartbeat behind that was that I teach high school students, and I will tell you, just from my experience, I've been teaching for 7 years, and the number one thing that they talk about as far, and it's at a Christian school, by the way, is that they just can't stand hypocrisy. Now, they'll be a hypocrite themselves, but and when you point it out to them, they'll admit it, they see it, but what they really can't is for people who are leaders in their lives, especially their parents, to see the hypocrisy. And so this is I want you to know, this is from a condemnational standpoint. I'm the biggest hypocrite in the world. I know that. But I have learned from those kids. It's been great to have the opportunity to teach them, because it really has helped me as my kids have gotten to the teen years. If that makes sense. I've been able, not to relate, because I know all the bands and all the clothes, and I bought some band shoes and like that. But just to be able to relate to where they're coming from. Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
There's, good. There is a sheet back there for...
What school you teach at?
Cornerstone Christian.
Cornerstone.
Yeah. So, anyhow, that's kind of where I was coming from with this particular lesson, just so that you have an idea. But the first line there says, "What is the most dangerous thing facing the Christian family in 2000 AD? And this is actually from The Case for Kids from Paul and Ted Tripp. And they said that it's lack of leadership. And that, obviously it would be leadership in the home. But, and that's why I went down this path. If you're not an authentic parent, if you're not a genuine parent from a biblical standpoint, then there is that lack of leadership. And kids pick that up. They see it, they feel it, and it causes a sense of maybe insecurity at first, and then over time a feeling of... not knowing, because they reach these ages, basically three stages. There's this stage that they call like the grammar stage, where everything's really basic. It's the reading, writing, arithmetic stage, for lack of a better term. But you hit the junior high, and it's called the logic stage, and they begin to question everything and wonder why, and they want answers. And then there's the high school stage of rhetoric, when they begin to express what they really believe about what they've learned so far. I always try to explain to my students that if I ever say, because the Bible says so, challenge me on it. Not so much that the Bible doesn't say so, but it's the why behind it. Why does the Bible say that? Why did God have these rules or laws or regulations or principles? And that whole process of working with them, working with my own kids, I've just seen that they have a real knack of picking up on when people aren't being authentic. So that's why I started with this lack of leadership thing, and specifically hypocrisy, that being the biggest issue. The second line that fill in says, being a parent requires genuine leadership. And what does that mean? It's honest and open relationships with others, not affected, trying to impress, or pretending. And you can't, and I don't know any of you in here, what roles you have, what work, or with other people, if you've been in clubs or organizations and you've been in a leadership position, but you can only pretend for a while, and then people will pick up on it. But if maybe you could do that for years, like 4 or 5 years, pretend to know what you're doing at a particular job or a particular organization. But the problem is with our kids, they're from like 0 to 18. 18 years of pretending doesn't work, and so it can come back to get you. The first section is, how do we pretend? And I went right to the hypocrisy thing. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and the streets, that they have glory of men. That's Matthew 6:2. And hypocrites is from the Greek. The original term was used to describe a Greek actor who wore a mask and portrayed in an exaggerated way the role that was being dramatized. This term became used to describe anyone who pretended to be what he or she was not. So when you think of that, when you think of hypocrite, and when you hear that word, or you hear people use that phrase, or you're sensing it, it's because we're really looking at somebody that's pretending. So a hypocrite is one who pretends to be a Christian.
Okay, so you called yourself a hypocrite, so are you pretending to be a Christian?
No, because as we go farther into this, you'll see that like the best example of hypocrisy, as far as acted out and dealt with in the Bible that I found, was actually Peter. When Paul confronts Peter, after Peter has gone to Antioch, and he is there, and we'll talk about some more, but he's there with the Gentiles, but then a group of Jewish leaders, and they're not even Christians, they call themselves Christian, come, and Peter begins to not sit with the Gentiles anymore, not eat food with the Gentiles anymore. And because of what he did, he caused this tremendous division in the Antioch church. So Paul actually comes, so there's an actual confrontation between Paul and Peter over this. And Paul says to him, you were so wrong that you even caused Barnabas to fall, because Barnabas started following Peter in this. So it wasn't that Peter wasn't a Christian, but I can still be hypocritical in the things that I do. And this is what I want us to analyze for ourselves as parents. You know, where are the areas that we tend to be hypocritical, that we may not see, they're blind spots. Or that, you know, sometimes things can happen in our lives where we allow sin into it. And then we have to recognize there will be consequences to that, especially with the kids and the them trying to understand, okay, I've got a parent, they're Christian, but they're hypocritical. How does that fit into the whole walk? Because kids try to be black and white. They try to put everything over here and here. And it's when they get older and they have their own children and they begin to see, oh, it's not so easy anymore. It's not, you know, it's not this black and white world. I mean, yes, there's wrong and right, but that it's that hypocrisy. So does that make sense?
It does. My confusion comes in, I called myself a hypocrite to one of my mentors, and she said, you're not really a hypocrite, you're a sinner. Because that's one of my biggest fears, that my children are going to see me as a hypocrite. And then she went through, you know, when you do you go and apologize to them? And yes, you know, I try to always go to them when I've done something that I'm, you know, scolding them for, and then I do it myself. Go to them and apologize and, you know, bring up the word of God. And so she said, so you're not really a hypocrite. That's where my confusion is coming.
And I think here, even in that particular passage of Scripture, you get the idea that Peter didn't necessarily follow through like that. In other words, he pulled himself back, he acted differently, and it wasn't until Paul confronted him that he went through that process of what you're talking about. So he was saying, you were a hypocrite here. But in a Christian world, we're going to sin. We will. We're human beings. But it is how you deal with it.
Okay.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I've got this quote from Tolstoy. He wrote War and Peace. Not that I've ever read it, but sounds really fancy. Hypocrisy is anything whatever may deceive the cleverest and most penetrating man, but the least wide awake of children recognizes it and is revolted by it, however ingeniously it may be disguised. And even Tolstoy, you know, this guy from the early 1800s, mid-1800s, he's saying, what I'm trying to express is that our kids really pick up on this stuff. And I honestly think it's good for us in a lot of ways as Christians. If you're open to it as a parent, you know, when my son or daughter come to me and say, you know, I don't understand why you do this, the automatic feeling I have is anger. Like, I want to defend myself. But from a Christian standpoint, you know, they're coming to me, they're 16 and 14, they have their own relationship with the Lord. They're also my Christian brother and my Christian sister. So I'm trying to take all that in, recognizing, okay, maybe I was hypocritical here. I need to, and like you said, Don, is at that point in time, apologize and work through it from a biblical standpoint, yeah.
So do you think the difference between hypocrite and sinner would be, it kind of looks like it points in the direction of a heart issue, where a hypocrite is trying to deceive, and the sinner will, you know, repent and ask for forgiveness?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a good way to describe it. The, and some people do it consistently. I think sometimes we do it and we don't recognize we are. And that, like I said, is blind spots. But once it's pointed out, it's whether we're gonna, it's a hard issue. Are we going to change it, or are we going to just leave it like it is, and they make excuses for it? And I put God's position on the matter, meaning hypocrisy. This is a passage out of Amos, and the Lord is really expressing his righteous anger with his people because they were worshiping other idols. In other words, they were pretending to be, you know, his people. But look at the words he says here. I hate, I despise, I do not savor, I will not accept them, nor will I regard them. Take away from me, I will not hear. In other words, he's really trying to separate himself out, not separate himself, but he's really trying to delineate that this hypocrisy is something that is a, you know, it's like a stench in his nostrils kind of thing because of the effects it has on other people. That's what you get out of the New Testament with the with Christ's, you know, confrontation with the Pharisees was that issue, their hypocrisy, and the damage they had done to the church, to the body, to the Israelites, his people. And so again, and you see Peter, the same thing. Paul says to him, look what's happened. This is wrong. And really what hypocrisy does in that pretending, we actually set people up for hurt and pain and failure, in a sense, because we have the opportunity to lead. We're given that opportunity, especially as parents. You know, we look at our children as they're not really ours, and they're God's, and we're stewards of those children. Almost like money, only there's, you know, we have to spend money on them. but really, they're not our children. They're just ours for that time being to care for and nurture and bring up in His ways. So if I'm being hypocritical and not dealing with the issue, I'm actually giving them a poor example, and that can actually cause them frustration and confusion. So, anyhow, that's what this is. That's where the heart is, and I just put the verses that deal with hypocrisy in the Scripture. But let me go to the application question. I have down there, hey, can you think of any examples for yourself where you've seen someone pretending to be a Christian? And I'm not asking for names. You don't have to, you know, give names. But can you think of anybody where that's actually had an impact on you? You want anyone to share?
I think about the time when I was in high school. You have a lot of kids who attend high school group, and they're you know, having fun. They're part of it, and then they, as soon as they graduate from high school, then all of a sudden you're on your own, and you see a lot of high school kids. They start going their own way, choices, and certainly make bad choices.
Right.
You know, and then they never, they basically disregard the church anymore.
Yeah. Not a lot of depth there in the relationship.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, when they were part of a high school group, they had the protection, but then they're gone, the real truth. Kind of like, Pastor said this morning, the real deal will show up.
Right.
You know, the person who is the real heart, but when all of a sudden the relationship, you know, they were on fire, and then they also didn't get a relationship, the real person inside comes up.
Yeah. That's very good. I had written down for myself, I was a teenager as well. And that's why I was thinking about this in particular, this particular lesson. But we were attending a church, and the pastor's son was the head of music ministry at the church. And then it came out that he had several inappropriate relationships with babysitters. He and his wife were, I don't know, I'm going to say, late 20s, early 30s, and so he was sent away, and then he came back, and it was kind of like this just period of time where he was out and came back, and everything was okay, you know, but I knew two of the girls, and the devastation on the family is what I remember, and that had a huge impact on me and my view of the church. Now, what was funny is, you know, I'm only, I think, 18 years old then, and I say only 18, I can be old in some aspects, but I'm thinking of the church, and I was so black and white, narrowly minded in the sense that, to me, that was the church. And so I kind of, you know, looked at, I said, well, you know, if that's what they're going to do, then fine. You know, I'm not going to ever trust the church again, type of thing. And that's why I'm so blessed with a church like here at FBC, where they really preach the truth and really go back to the gospel. But I had not been exposed to that yet. So because of my age and because of where I was, there were a number of years that occurred after that. And I'm not excusing my sin at all or trying to blame anybody. It just has an effect. That's what I'm trying to say. So anyway, yeah, I think if you actually look at it and you think back in your lives, you'd probably find the same thing. And so now what I'm trying to do for myself is apply this to my kids. And then my grandkids after that. You know, it's like we're sitting and, you know, we've gone to church. It's been a great day. We're taking communion. Everything's going good. And then we're all driving home together as a family, and my wife and I start to fight. You know, I make some comment, and, you know, we start to bicker, and by the time we get home, which is only about a 10-minute ride home, you know, there's tension. Now, what did I just show my kids? You know, I'm blessed enough to have kids that just know that I am a sinner. And so they'll be patient with me for a while. But if it's a consistent thing, if it's regularly happening, there's areas in my life like that, then, you know, I need to really look at myself, figure out where I am with the Lord and what effect that's having on them. But I want to get to how this starts. And this is not a comfortable subject because I think that we all deal with this, but truly my heart behind this is if we're trying to be better parents, if we're trying to really raise up children that are following God, then I think some of these things we need to look at and not necessarily look at and say, oh, I don't commit adultery, I don't murder, I don't steal. There are heart issues that are deeper, that are like pride and, the selfishness that goes along with pride, arrogance, false humilities, those kinds of things. That are, when somebody lives with you for 18 years, they're going to pick that stuff up, and then they've got to deal with it. So that's kind of where I'm headed with all this. But the first place it starts is love of self. In Titus 1:6 it says, they profess that they know God, but in works they deny Him. And it's basically, you know, the fruit of our lives that is what they're talking about there. If a man makes a profession of religion... Oh, by the way, this is by Solomon Stoddard. Does anybody know who he is? He is a Puritan preacher. He's actually, I think it's Jonathan Edwards, either great-grandfather or grandfather. But what he says here is so cool, because it's exactly what we're talking about today. If a man makes a profession of religion and lives in the way of sin against the light of his conscience, he's a hypocrite. He who makes a profession and contradicts in his conversation is a hypocrite. He who pretends to godliness and turns aside to crooked ways is a hypocrite. For those who are really godly live in a way of obedience. And, you know, he goes through and highlights three different points. And the reason I thought it was so great was it's the way you live in the way of sin, your conversation, and then your actual actions, three different ways. And as far as lives in sin in the light of his conscience, the first part. For instance, that there. I am at home, I'm watching television with my kids, and an inappropriate commercial comes on, or an inappropriate show. Do I go ahead and fast forward, you know, if we've TiVo'd it? Do I pause it and say, we'll get back to this, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, let some time go by? Or do I just sit there on the couch and watch it with my kids, thinking, you know what, this is just the world, I don't have to deal with it. You know, at this point in time in my life, I pause it, if it's live, and then we just chit-chat. But if I let that go, and my son is, especially my 14-year-old son, is sitting there watching me, then he's learning from me, but I guess watching this, letting this into your mind isn't all that bad, type of thing. That's what, in other words, if I live in a way of sin, but against the light of my conscience, and these are the things that he and I talked about, he's going to pick that up, and that is hypocrisy for me. If I contradict in my conversation, if I am very, and I will tell you, our children happen to have a very, very good wit, and we can be biting with each other at times, so I have to watch it, and I'm very sarcastic by nature. And so at times I have to really watch it. You know, I have to think, ooh, is that too much? And I remember, this is the first time this has happened to me, but a couple of weeks ago I said something to my daughter, and she's walking by, and I was just, you know, off the top of my head thinking it was funny. It was not funny. And I had no idea until my wife was kind enough to tell me, I think you might have hurt her feelings. I was like, oh, no, because honestly, my daughter, she's like tough, you know, she's a tough kid. And so I didn't even think of it. So I walked into her bedroom to say, hey, you know, Mom, I said, Mom, let me check on you. Because and then she turned around, her eyes were red, and there was tears running in her face. And I waited for about 15 minutes, so I didn't really think it was that big of a deal. And I was heartbroken. I was like, how could I do this to my daughter? And I didn't mean it. You know, it wasn't him. But again, so I apologize, and we walked through that. But have you ever done, especially with your kids, you do something like that, and it feels like it takes... Yes, sir.
I'm just counting.
Okay. It feels like it takes like 20 positives to outdo one negative, you know? I'm complimenting her everything, and I'm giving her more allowance now. All these different things, you're trying to make up for the one thing. I think there's a natural aspect to that. This is an advertising or marketing deal, but you guys ever heard the concept of the pebble? You know, you take a pebble and you throw it into a pond, and there's the little, you know, ripples from it. And that's how positives are in our lives. And you continue to do that, and they go and go and go. But a negative is like a rock. All those pebbles you threw in seem to be completely gone when you throw in one rock, because then you get big ripples, and they wipe out everything. And that's why this hypocrisy thing is such a big deal in my life. And I think other people's lives, especially leaders, whether it's in the home or out of the home, because people rely on that. Hear what I'm saying to you. I understand that today, me at 40 years old, I have to accept the fact men are sinners. You know, we sin. So I can't put my trust in a man. That's not what it is. My trust is in God. So I've got past that. But again, that ages, those young ages, they don't think that way. And so this is why I'm talking about this stuff. I'm not advocating that we're completely responsible for all the children's sin. Does that make sense? I'm just asking us to look at who we are and how we talk. Do we live what we say? Are we sinning out now at home where it seems private because our kids, you know, nobody else is around us? Are we only a Christian at church, so to speak, and not at home? That type of thing. So hypocrisy begins with ignoring your conscience and the love of self. And to obey, this is really cool. Stoddard said, for those who are really godly, live in a way of obedience. The word obey means to follow the law or to be controlled by something or someone. So really it's a lordship issue. You know, allowing the Lord to control your life, allowing him to be king. Yes.
Can you repeat that quote again?
Oh, sure.
It actually begins with ignoring your conscience for the...
Love of self. Right. I looked down my sheet and I lost it.
Okay.
Yeah, hypocrisy begins with ignoring your conscience for the love of self. So, it's a lordship issue, and that's a big deal. That's a hard issue. Because I can say that he's Lord, but, you know, there are various times he's not Lord. There are various issues that he's not Lord of, so is he really Lord? You gotta wrestle with that. I try to honestly picture my heart with a throne in it, yeah, and Christ sitting on it.
That's what I tell my kids, too. I ask them, what's on the throne of your heart? So it's a self-examination.
Yeah.
For them and for us.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Would you say that, then, hypocrisy is not necessarily the things that we know in our life we need to work on? We got that. I know I lose my temper quick, or I know I do this, or whatever. It's maybe the areas that I'm digging my heels in privately about. Yeah, I see that area in my life, and I'm not going to work on it. Or it's a reflection of just the quick, ugly things that come out of my heart, and maybe I'm blind to some of them. Is that my getting it?
Yeah, exactly. I think there are the things that we willingly say no to, we're just not going to change. That's just who we are, so you have to accept it, type of thing. When all along, how do I say this? I am not the measure of what is good. The only way I can measure that, and the only standard I can have, is Christ. So if Christ is, if Christ really is not that way, if he's, if it's not loving, if it's not kind, it's not gentle, it's not merciful, it's not gracious, it's not justful, you know, those kinds of things, then that's the only measure I have. I don't get to dig my heels in. And then there are spots, too, where we know we do, and we're, but I think that's the process of regeneration. I mean, if you could honestly ask my family, and I'd be comfortable with this question now, has Scott, over the years, gotten better with his temper? Because there was a point in time that I was pretty quick. When I say pretty quick, I mean kind of myself. I mean, I had a temper, you know, and it came quickly. So I know that that's still within me, but I also have truly allowed the Lord to really work on my heart in that area, and so I've changed a lot. But I still recognize that it's there. Does that make sense? The second place, or second way, the pretending starts is the fear of man. And this goes to the scripture about Peter, Don. Now when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played a hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with the hypocrisy. Now, what's interesting about this is those of the circumcision, is actually, it was like a cult. They were not true believers. So, but they were Jewish. And Peter, you know, was at the point that he feared man more than he feared God. He was willing to, you know, bow down to that. And so Paul ends up confronting him over this. And I wanted to read to you this part of a commentary from MacArthur on this particular point. The reason I had to underline the part about Barnabas. This is the commentary. Peter not only withdrew from the Gentile believers himself, but by example, indirectly induced the rest of the Jews to join him in hypocrisy. The separation became so widespread and influential that even the godly Barnabas, who at this time was one of the pastors of Antioch, was carried away into the sin. Paul and Barnabas had recently been on a fruitful missionary journey together, had gone with each other to the Jerusalem Council, and were now co-pastors at Antioch. They had taught together, prayed together, ministered together, and suffered together. They were the closest of friends and loved each other deeply. It was Barnabas who had first befriended and defended Paul, and when he went to Jerusalem shortly after his conversion. Many times Barnabas had heard Paul preach the gospel of salvation by faith alone, and had preached it many times himself. But even he was carried away by the legalistic hypocrisy of Peter and others. It may have been Barnabas' hypocrisy on this occasion that began the eventual rift with Paul, and a short while later resulted in their separation, overtaking John Mark on the next journey. That's huge. You know, again, I go back to what Peter did. And it was a fear of man. And in that, he caused the church to split. He caused Barnabas to fall. And, you know, and I know the part, last part's a little speculative as to whether or not that caused the rift. But and this is an area of hypocrisy I think we need to look at, too. It's not necessarily all the things like pride and anger and temper and those things that are the over sin. In this particular area, Paul was trying to be holy. He was relying, you know, on the Jewish tradition he'd been raised in. But that was hypocritical. So there are ways that we can try to be holier than thou, so to speak, in front of our children. And the reality is, they're going to, at some point in time in their lives, they're going to figure out that was not the measure of holiness. So it's that balance in there, you know, of trying to truly follow a biblical model for our kids. And what's way encouraging about this is Peter. You know, he walked with Christ. He knew Christ. He saw Christ. He talked with Christ. He denied Christ, and Christ forgave him. And yet, with all that, he's just a man. He's Peter. And so, I don't know, I'm not trying to create a situation where people are thinking about this and, you know, knocking themselves to death over stuff. That's not it. It just happens, and how you deal with it, that's the big thing. The really cool thing about kids, too, that I've noticed, whether it's the ones I teach or my own children at home, they are very, very forgiving, so long as you ask and you admit. That is what endears them to you. That is what has endeared my children. I know This is not a pat on my back. I know, though, that what has endeared my children to me is me going to them and saying, I screwed up. I am so sorry. Please forgive me. I can't fix it. I can only tell you I'm sorry. And the tremendous impact that it has on, especially from a father to a child, it doesn't matter son or daughter, either way, because they're seeing the leader in the home willing to recognize sin and follow the biblical principles. And what happens there is, then when my children now make mistakes, if I had modeled for them this sense of, I'm the dad, so what I say goes. It doesn't matter if I'm wrong, I'm the dad, I'm the leader, you have to listen. That almost dictatorial, you know, type of leadership. Then what's going to happen when my son now is hitting 14, 15, what would he do? He'd do the exact same thing, because that's what I modeled for him. But the frustrating thing is, I would get mad at him for being, you know, a sinner, and that he had so much pride, but I'm the one that modeled it for him. You create this vicious cycle in your own family. Instead, you know, my children go through the same process I do. It takes some time to, you know, swallow your pride. But they're very, very good right now about coming out, you know, within 24 hours at least, and apologizing. And it's not because of the fact they're great people. It's just the fact that they've been taught that, and the Lord's taught me that. Does that make sense? It's just one of those things. It's really hard to do, but it works. And it's great to see when you begin to model the right things in your family, even through sinful situations, that it comes back. So, basically, Peter knew the truth, that salvation comes only through the justification by faith, but he allowed this fear of man to override all that. So, the line to fill in, hypocrisy begins with the fear of man as opposed to the fear of God. Begins with love of self, and it begins with the fear of man as opposed to the fear of God. Those two things. I guess I'm going to throw out there to you to think about, you know, we're going to be hypocrites. We've already talked about that. It's what we do with it. Like you said, Don, earlier. It'll happen, but it's how you deal with it that turns it into a good situation or a continuing bad one. Again, some more application questions. First one is, do you love yourself more than you love God? Who do you fear? And the reason I put that in there is, I don't necessarily mean, like, you know, Dracula or anything like that. It's, do you find yourself compromising the gospel for other people? Are there relatives that you have that come over, you know, aunts, uncles, grandparents, brothers, sisters, cousins, that you spend a lot of time with, but because they're family, you find yourself unwilling to live the gospel out the way you've said to your kids, this is important. You bring them to a church like this that teaches it, but when push comes to shove and you have the opportunity to really do it in those hard situations, do you fear your family more than you fear God? Yeah.
Can I give an example?
Absolutely.
And don't get me wrong, this isn't about me, but you could come up with 100 of them about me. But this young lady, she wasn't a believer, and her mom bought her a cat. She was a mom. She was married, and her older mom bought her a cat, and she didn't really want it. It was a really expensive cat. Caused a lot of strife in their marriage. Long story short, they accidentally ran over the cat and killed it. And she was so afraid to tell her mom that when they got together for a family dinner, one of her kids brought up the fact how the cat had died. And the mom lied to her mom. It would be like me lying about that, saying to my own daughter, that didn't happen, what are you talking about? Totally calling Jessica a liar, just so I didn't upset my own mom. And she's not a believer, and so I'm just saying that was a great example to me when I heard that story of how, are there areas in my life where I'm so afraid of rocking the boat or doing something else that I completely undo with my kids all those things I worked so hard to try to do? And I mean, really, for what? A cat. Thanks, I'm not a cat lover.
Oh, yeah. That's a great example, though. You know, there are situations, I know myself, where I've been in this, where depending on who it was and what was going on, I wimped out. You know, I didn't take the opportunity to share the gospel. I didn't live it out right. so much easier. My mom teaches Bible, and she's a very good illustration. Every year, being a year when she's talking about sin, she'll have a student stand up on this big chair thing she has. So they get up on there, and then she's, you know, how old she is right now, I forget, in her 50s, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, she'll stand down there like this, she'll hold her hand, they go, go ahead, pull me up. And so, you know, they try to pull her up, and they can't. And then she goes, hold on, and she just yanks him down. And it's so much easier to pull somebody down than it is to pull somebody up. And if we're in a situation like that, it's good for us to remember that and think about, okay, what am I going to do in a situation with my kids watching me? Am I going to be pulled down, or am I going to, you know, try to pull up, that type of thing. And then the last key question, I stole this from Chris, are you the worst sinner you know? And I threw that in there because of being on the opposite side of the coin. Like with Peter. Peter's hypocrisy was based on him trying to be righteous with another group of people. I have, you know, I've had parents at the school whose relationships with their kids is not good because they're always trying to hold them to this Christian standard. And yet, the standard they're holding them to isn't really a biblical standard. It is one based on works, not based upon true relationship with Christ. And so the kids see that, and that causes frustration. But it really is a necessity for us to examine that. And because what happens is, what's happened to the parent begins to happen to the kid, they become self-righteous. And then they look at other students, or your kids can look at other kids and think, I'm better than that person. But if my children know I'm the worst sinner, I know, and I explain that to them and tell them, not say every detail back why, but just keep humble for them, my children will have a better opportunity to witness to other kids because they won't consider themselves, you know, these great kids. We've homeschooled our kids since day one. That's what we've done. The last thing I want my kids to do is think they're better than somebody else because they're homeschooled. That's ridiculous. They are not. They're sinners. And so I remind them of that all the time. Purposefully. So that they know. And I'm not being mean about it. I'm explaining to them, listen, this is who you are in Christ. Other than that, you're nothing. So I tell them, think about how long the earth's been around. Just, you know, listen, now, put the earth in perspective of the solar system. Put the solar system in galaxy. The galaxy in comparison to the universe. We're nothing as a planet. Then I said, think of yourself as a human being on this planet. How big are you? And then think of how many people have been born from the beginning of time till now. How many? So what makes you so important? Nothing. Except for your relationship with Christ. And so it's just, I'm trying to use that as a tool to keep them in perspective of who they are. Then who are the pretenders? Who is it that is pretending? That other people that model this, and that we find ourselves modeling after sometimes. This is 1 Timothy 4:1-2. Now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. Matthew 24:12. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. And finally, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn away their ears from the truth and be turned aside to fables. All of these groups of people are called hypocritical lie speakers. And our world is filled with them. We're inundated with them right now. Just turn on, you know, the television and watch some of the, I'm not name names, which was which, but just turn on some of the programs, the religious programs, and listen. Okay, we as parents have a very important role in trying to protect our children from, you know, burning their hands or jumping off a cliff or riding your bike down, you know, the Grand Canyon. At the same time, that's just their physical body. The eternal part of them is their spirit. And we do a really good job of, you know, not letting, you know, Johnny play out in the street. Because we understand it. We see that, the here and now. But what we don't think about is eternity. And we don't put those two things together. It's like this. We think here and now, eternity. But the reality is like this. And everything we do here affects this. And so because we fail to put those two things together, often as parents, we miss the, you know, eternal perspective on things and what the real harm can be or should be, type of thing for a kid to understand themselves. I just had a discussion with my son this week, and one of the things I've been seeing, just because of his particular job, he's got a particular job, and he works there about 4 to 5 hours a night. And that's a long time, because that's 20 hours a week. And it's with many non-Christians. So I was asking him to really think. I wasn't trying to tell him what to do right now, but I was giving him a warning, like a red flag, and saying, I'm concerned. I want you to think, what are the things you can do to protect yourself from being more like this group of people here than this people? Because I asked him, I said, you be honest with me. If I were to ask you, are you more like this group or this group, who do you think? And he admitted it was the group, non-Christian group. And I said, and son, I'm not knocking you for it. I understand that. It's because you spent a great amount of time there. And yeah, that's your job. But the reality is that's not who you're supposed to be. And that will have a long-term effect on you if you don't get, you know, hold on. So I want you to come up with three things that you can do to prevent that. And we'll talk about it next week. You know, give him the opportunity to at least think it through and come up with some ideas. And right away, he had one that was great. I was really proud of him. But that's a spirit. You know, if he dies tomorrow, I will be sad. I would be much sadder if he died tomorrow. And I didn't take the opportunity to make sure his soul was secure. Because I lost it all. I mean, I didn't do my job. So when it comes to this false teaching, that's why I'm talking about this. Because there will come times when our children face this. The Bible's full. I've got some of the scriptures down there. But the Bible's full of warnings about false doctrine. In other words, it's going to happen. It surrounds us. And I have friends whose children moved to Utah. And when they did, guess what? They became Mormons. Because that's what they were inundated with. Mormonism. And so it can happen. And so there's things like that all around us. It's our responsibility to find good, solid teaching. I have a... let's see, how did I do this? Okay, I'm sorry, I wanted to back up. I have a quote here. I wanted to go through this quote with you. You don't have anyone listed. I'm sorry, you don't have the identity of the person that gave this quote. But I'm going to tell you about this, and then at the end, the conclusion, it'll bring things together. Dateline did a show a couple years ago with Tom Brokaw. And they completed an extensive interview with a really well-known pastor of a 10,000 plus member church. On the Dateline thing, they introduced the pastor, and he was the model for the mega church movement. And so, going through the interview, Brokaw finally looks at him. He says that he had been really surprised because he had attended the Sunday services, but during the Sunday services, there was no mention of sin. And so this is where the quote comes up. It says, we do talk about sin, but the issue is Jesus took care of our sin, and Jesus removes guilt from our life, so the emphasis in our church isn't how to get your sins removed, because that's pretty easy to do. Jesus did that on the cross. The emphasis in our church is how to fulfill the destiny that God's called you to. We are in the business of trying to spread the love of God and help people live good lives. That is a huge, huge, huge predominant thought process in our culture today. And it's amazing. And the fact, honestly, when I read this, what offended me the most wasn't the deception that the people live in here. What offended me was that he said, the thing about getting our sins removed, that's easy to do. He forgot the cost. And I'm sure that moment, if Christ was going through that, it wasn't an easy ordeal. But that's where we live today. We live in that, and our kids are surrounded by that all over. I see that at the Christian school. I can honestly say this without feeling, you know, like maybe I'm stretching it. Over 50 to 60% of those kids attending a Christian school are not Christians. Some think they do. Some think they are. And they are not. And I have very open conversations with them about it. It's very, very blunt about the sin in their lives and who they really are and what Christianity really is and what the true standard is. They can't tell me basic things about the scripture, but they go to churches that are like this, so they think they're Christian. And I'm not saying about anybody here in the room, but we are all parents, and we're potential grandparents. And this is the stuff that's surrounding us. So we just need to keep them, you know, aware of what's going on. The commentator was surprised, meaning Brokaw, and said, "You're making it easier for them." And the pastor replied, "Making it easier for them, just like Jesus did and just like Moses did." So, yeah.
Moses made it easy.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure that out too. How did he get Moses out of that? But again, I heard another commentator with another megachurch pastor say, you've been accused of teaching a cotton candy gospel. And that's where it's out there. It's easy to eat, but it has no sustenance to it.
So itching ears.
Yeah, exactly. It's the itching ears. That's what's out there. People want that. And that takes me to the next thing. Teaching is two-sided, by the way. Learning is not going on. You teach, right? Okay, so learning is not going on if all we're doing is teaching and the students are asleep. Mm-hmm. Teaching is you have to have somebody who actually wants to be taught. Even when I have the kid looking dead, you know, at my eyes, just listen to, I think he's listening to me, and he's not. There's no teaching there. He could be thinking about the football game that night and miss the whole lesson. So, in other words, what I'm trying to say is, it goes back to your itching ear comment, there's a desire for false doctrine out there. And we have to make sure that we're modeling for our kids that we don't desire that, we don't want that, and it's not good for them to desire that either. Because it's easy to fall into that trap when you're sinning.
Yeah, but the comment you just made about your teaching, but the kid is sleeping, I think you're talking about more in the classroom setting. There's times where we've tried to explain certain things with our children, and it looks like they're spiritually sleeping. You know, they're watching, but it's just like over their head. But you know, one thing I understood is that God shows us a little bit of that fruit from what we've planted. Like with our teenager who's 16, you know, she's really, I mean, it's just amazing because she's surrounded by those hypocritical lie speakers of, I mean, on her dad's side of the family, of atheists and feminists. And they're trying to indoctrinate her. And my daughter doesn't know the scriptures exactly, but from her heart and from what the Lord has shown her and spoken through her heart, she takes a stand. She says, "I'm sorry, what you're saying is wrong. I'm not going to follow and be open-minded to what people think. Christ is the truth." You know,
that's awesome.
And just hearing that just blesses me. But,
absolutely.
You know, sometimes we don't get that immediate response, that immediate fruit, and it takes a while. But, you know, just we're responsible for planting.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is our side of it. And then, you know, they have to take it and to do something with it. And that's a great example. And it's a really good point, too. That I'm talking about is from the parental standpoint. I'm assuming everybody coming in here believes or agrees with the fact that we are just the stewards of our kids. They're not ours. And it's kind of like when Chris was talking about today, that leave and cleave thing, you know. He hammered that point, but he hammered it for a reason. Parents don't let their children leave a lot of times. And they don't, you know, cut them off. I remember the day my dad cut me off. It was like, oh, man, that was cold. And I wasn't even married yet. But in his mind, you know, he grew up on a farm in Colorado. He worked hard. He's been the hardest working man I've ever known in my life. But I remember I had gone away to college. And I called, and I was really having a hard time. I was really feeling homesick. And I had my mom, you know, I'm having this conversation with my mom. She goes, "Oh, honey, whatever you need, you know, baby, come home." Blah, blah, blah. So my dad gets on the phone, and he says, "How you doing?" I said, "Good." And I told him the same thing. And his answer was very clear. He goes, "Son, you're going to have to get used to this feeling." I was like, "That's it? That's all you have to say?" You know, I had a half an hour of all this consolation from my mother. And that's what my dad says. But it was the best thing that ever happened. Because he basically was telling me, "You're on your own. You're a man now. You chose that path. Live with it." And it was really cool. And as I look back on it, it was really cool. At the moment, it wasn't. But, no, it is very good, you know, that whole thing about, you know, letting them go. And this is just our responsibility to be the best examples to them that we can. And like I said, hypocrisy is just one of those things that seems to creep up. We don't see it sometimes, or we don't recognize the actual effects of it. That's what I'm trying to talk about today. False teaching allows people to be comfortable where they are. So, you know, ask yourself, seriously, are you comfortable? Do your children seem comfortable? Are there things you're doing that are really challenging yourself? I mean, some people really do have, and I was not paid to do this or asked to do this. I'm talking about the Uganda trip. Okay, some people really have the means to go on that. It wouldn't even bother them as far as financially. But they don't because maybe they want to go to Florida or somewhere or whatnot. When you're thinking through being an example for your kids, are there areas like that where you can actually make a sacrifice, or can you do things? And you're not trying to brag to them about it. You're trying to show them how it affects the family so they learn from that. They see it. So this was a good... Honestly, this question was one I put, I think, more for myself than anybody else. Because I thought about, am I comfortable where I'm at? And pretty much I am. I got it pretty easy. And so I'm trying to think of ways that I can begin to share with my kids. I went to Guatemala one time, but I think we need to take them to Mexico. Let them see.
I made the mistake and told my daughter, since you're not obeying, you're going to stay here. So she went to the car to get her bags. She wanted to stay there because there were all the kids at that orphanage.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and so I've got to think of ways that my kids can see, you know, Christianity being lived out where it costs something.
Did the bugs in Uganda, does that count?
Yeah. I think that's just a great opportunity. You know, and the thing is, going back to this whole thing on the false teaching, one last thing. Did anybody ever see that documentary called Super Size Me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was disgusting. And the reason it was disgusting was it was so true. Mm-hmm. But we live in a fast food world, fast-paced world. You know, we want it here, want it now. I get frustrated when the microwave isn't heated up in a minute. I mean, I'm frustrated, literally. I'm like, God, how long is this going to take? You know? I do that. When I sit back, I think about it and think, you know, wow, Abraham Lincoln, he can get read by a candle. I'm sure he didn't get this thing done in a minute. It's amazing how off I am in my thinking as opposed to how God looks at the whole world, right? But we live in that kind of society, and so they want that kind of thing. And the fast food gospel is about as nutritious as McDonald's was. And that movie, it was, you know, 30 days, and that guy, I don't remember how much weight he put on. He was just out of shape. It was ridiculous. All he did was eat McDonald's for 30 days. That's it. And I remember, like, in the very beginning, he was eating it, and he actually vomited because he had lived on vegetables and water, like a super great diet, you know, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, you know. And then he did this, and the effects it had on his body, and it was kind of sad. So I still enjoy a Big Mac, but
half a Big Mac,
moderately. Yeah, exactly.
I think it's the fries and the Coke. There's that one guy in that movie, he ate Big Macs only.
Yeah, that's right.
He never ate the fries and the Coke.
Yeah, the sugar and that. Boy, oh, yeah.
So I don't think it's the Big Mac. It's the fries and the Coke.
Has there been anybody into Nessies down here?
What?
Nessies?
Oh, yeah.
That's so good.
You know that I could eat it? I can eat it like the In-N-Out if I took the bun off. I can have the small fries and the Diet Coke, and it was a part of... When I was had gestational diabetes, it was a part of the plan that I could do that, and I never tested too high.
That's cool.
Well, actually, that movie that you even said, In-N-Out, was actually probably the healthiest fast food place you could go to for beef or something like that. Not that it was good for you fat wise, but that.
That's
probably healthier.
That doesn't make me feel better about it now. They just put one up by our house.
Just don't go to Carl's Jr. Carl's Jr. is like rated way up there bad.
Is that where we're meeting after Carl's
Jr.?
Yeah, exactly.
Double pastrami. What was that one?
That burger? I know. It was like this high. Oh. But anyway, so then the next part of this section, who are the pretenders, are those that participate in ceremonial religion. Be on your guard against the yeast of Pharisees, which is hypocrisy, Matthew 16:6, and Mark and Luke. This is from, again, MacArthur's commentaries here on the sheet you have. The most sinister influence of the Jewish leaders was their pragmatic, results-oriented doctrine or teaching, which allowed room for hypocrisy because they were so focused on external matters and ceremonies that they lost sight of the real issue, man's heart. Okay? This is a big deal because it is super, super easy for us to discipline our children looking for external obedience factors, things like that, and miss the heart issues. I can't tell you the number of times I found myself trying to make sure that, in the discipline process, I've expressed that I love them and I've expressed why the discipline's occurring. It's not just because you didn't do what I told you to do. I mean, yes, that's it, but there's a bigger reason to that. There's a big picture reason. And explaining that big picture reason and giving them the understanding of why, especially at these ages, is very important. When they see that and they get that, they really do, even if they tell you, I don't care or I think it's stupid, it hangs on. You know, it's like you said, you begin to plant those seeds and then it hangs on. So you try to, in disciplining your kids and talking about going to church, we really struggled with this because my wife and I are both from the Midwest. And I would tell you, if anybody's done business East Coast to Midwest to West Coast, there's a difference. There's a difference in the way, the speed of things. There's a difference in the way people dress. And that's where I'm headed. Go to East Coast church, everybody's in a tie. Okay? Midwest is still kind of that way. Out here, first time I went to church and saw over 50% of the people just in Hawaiian shirts and shorts, I was flipping out. And I think this is, inside I selfish thought this is great. But I didn't know of the tie for a while. But I still have a hard time not wearing dress shoes to church. It's this cultural thing for me, right? Well, we moved out here, our kids were young, and all of a sudden, we're going to the youth group here, and Michael and Jessica wanted to wear jeans and Vans to church. And, when we got down to it, it's not a heart issue. That's not, it doesn't say you're a Christian or not a Christian. That's really, it had nothing to do with their particular relationship with God. We talked about how we don't think you should wear jeans that are all ratty and, clothes, because there is a certain level of decorum, and it's because you're in God's house. You're worshiping God today. So keep that in mind. But that was something for me. I was trying to not externalize religion for them, but make it an eternal heart issue for them. And then, but there are times like Easter or Christmas, and they have to get dressed up. And so now they're saying to us, you know what, this is dumb. We can wear it here, but not here. I said, no, this isn't dumb. Now this is an issue of my preference overriding your preference because I'm a parent. And so you will have to live with this. This is a matter for obedience for you. And then they try to argue that, and I say, well, what did Abraham do when God told him to sacrifice his son? Do you think that was dumb? Well, that's the big argument, They can't override that one. It's like, okay, Dad. But there are times, where it is just an obedience factor. But just, try to look at how we're... If you're externalizing religion for them.
Yeah, Scott.
Yes, sir.
Little example. A lot of times discipline for me is a time issue. Like just this morning, it happens a lot. But I'm just thinking back just this morning, coming to church, and we're trying to get here on time, and I'm holding a hand of our six-year-old daughter, and she's kind of resisting, kind of walking slow, and I'm trying to get along, and it's, I don't have time to sit down with her and tell her that, this is a heart issue. You're doing this because you're resisting. You don't, you want to do your own thing, but I'm trying to get there on time too. So it's just a quick little spot on the behind a couple of times and things like that, get her moving along, but it's hard sometimes. Do you have any suggestions on things like that? When it's a time issue, you don't have time to sit there and get to the heart of the matter. You want to get somewhere on time,
I think in a situation like that, and Steve, I know exactly what you're talking about. Jessica, when she was about two or three, went through the stage where she refused, at two or three, refused to put on the clothes we gave her for church. Okay, she would... want to do something else. And so, but I do remember a Sunday, I finally got over that and sat down with her, and I just took the time, because it's like a teachable moment time. I can talk to Michael and Jessica about something they did a week ago, and they remember it really, really well. And if your daughter, if you know your daughter better than I do, if you can wait until after church and talk to her about it and say, you remember this when we were coming here? This is why, that's how I would handle that. Because you're trying to get here on time. It's the littler ones that seem to be more difficult because they don't think like that. You say, do you remember you did this last week? I never did that. Yes, you did. Well, I think they sometimes honestly forget at a certain age or just not remembering. So if she's able to reflect back on that time, then I'd address it later. Because you're trying to do all that. And the same thing with the kids, I'll see, like for me with their ages, and you guys with your kids too, the older ones probably the same way, but I'll see an attitude or something that I don't like. It just doesn't look right, it doesn't sound right. And I'll wait until we get home and say, you know what, back, remember when you said this to Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so, that was not respectful. I didn't mean to. I'm not talking about mean. I'm just telling you it didn't sound respectful. So I'd like you to examine your heart more there. That kind of thing. Okay. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's a great question, because we find ourselves in that a lot. Parents in the grocery store. I was in the grocery store the other day. This kid was, holy cow. I think he screamed. He was mad for a solid 15 minutes. Before the mom took him out. Now, I'm not judging her, it's just I probably would have done it in about 30 seconds. That's just the difference in me. Because you can tell when they're starting to be rebellious. And when they cross that line, and that's like, cut it off. So, yeah. But it's hard to figure that out sometimes with all the other things we're trying to weigh. And especially for dads, by the way, that brings up another whole issue. We as fathers, we're supposed to be like leading the family. But I find myself, I come home, it's 6 o'clock at night now, had all these things, and Michelle's saying, you know what, you need to talk to Jessica or Michael because of this. And the reality is, my flesh does not want to do it. I just don't. I am so excited to turn on the television and eat potato chips. I mean, seriously, that's what I love to do. If I could be completely 100% selfish, I would turn on the television, watch whatever game, if there's a game I like on, or, one of the comedies. Just to bench. It's fun. It's nice. It's relaxing. I earned it, for gosh sakes. I got up. I was at work at 5:45. I got home at 6 o'clock. I earned that. But the reality is, I signed on to be a parent. It didn't just happen. I wasn't just appointed. There's a process there. And so I'm responsible for that. And that's a really good point, because those are the times for me, I don't think I have the time. But I have talked with my kids as late as 11, 12. One time I think my daughter and I were up to about 1 o'clock talking through an issue. And it was hard, because at that point in time, I don't even care. I don't even care that I don't care. I mean, it's past that. And the only thing that's driving me is the desire to hopefully have see heart change.
I work with a guy who he'll flat out tell me all the time he can't wait until his kids are gone, I just don't understand him. I just always think, why did you even have kids? Is it just because it was like a response? It was like something you need to do at this point in your life or something like that? It's sad.
Yeah, no, it is. That is very sad. I teach my kids all the time. They're 16 and 14, I said that before, and we have about 4 years left. And then, then my wife and I get to live a whole new life. It's like, hey, you guys, right? Let's go. I say things like that in jest, but like Jessica and Michelle and I went out to talk about college this week. And oh my gosh, I was having a hard time choking back tears in the discussion, because I was realizing a year from now she's going to go to college. I don't want her to leave. I liked everything Chris said about the woman thing, or having the girl, because that guy is going to have a hard time getting past my, approval process. No, honey, I just don't think that's what God has for you. Like 35. But, I think we're all here because we love our kids, bottom line. We all love our children, which is really cool. It's great to be at a church with so many kids. We were talking about that earlier when she came in. And to see the desire for family strength here. There's a real desire for it. It's so cool to be part of. you feel like you get encouraged to do it here. But the lordship issue, this thing about, you know, being ceremonial in the things we do, what's interesting, it started clear back with Cain, you know, when he tried to give his offering that was all with all the fruits and vegetables versus the meat. And then you look at King Saul, and when King Saul was given specific instructions on what to do with that particular group of people, the Amalekites, and he comes back. He was supposed to destroy everything, but he comes back with a big booty. And, you know, he's basically saying, well, I did this for you, God. I did this so that I can sacrifice more to you. And God looks at him through Samuel and says, no, to obey is better than sacrifice. And again, it's that same concept. It's a lordship issue for us. Obedience to God in front of our children is awesome. Great example. The third thing, fruitless religion. Children see this too. And this is kind of a tie into the last point as far as the ceremonial. You know, a lot of times our children see us give our time and our service and our money, and we talk about it in a way that it's haughty. Or look at how much I do for the church. Or look how, that's just something we have to be careful of being in the church, so that we're not giving our kids the wrong impression of what it is we're doing and how important it is. And you know, that makes us a Christian. That makes us a better Christian. And then you get to, that's fruitless, and then in the sense that it's hollow, and then there's having no fruit whatsoever. In other words, there's no works at all. You know, faith without works is dead. So there's this balance in that you're trying to obtain for your kids. Jonathan Edwards had this great quote that I put in here. There are two kinds of hypocrites. One that deceive with their outward morality and external religion, many of whom are professed Arminians in the doctrine of justification, and the other are those that are deceived with false discoveries and elevations, who often cry down works and men's own righteousness, and talk themselves of free grace, but at the same time make a righteousness of their discoveries and of their humiliation, and exalt themselves to heaven with them. So it's that balance between those that are doing it with all the works, and then those that are saying, oh no, this is all righteousness, you know, works are bad. Honestly, I can't look at any one human being and say what it is, like, that they're being that way. It's a heart issue between that person and God. I mean, over time, you can tell with people. If you see no works at all, there's a question. If you hear them bragging and being braggadocious and all that about their works, you know, that makes it more evident. But the reality is, this is really a heart issue between us and God. And our kids and our spouses and people who live with this most and pick up on it. They see all the other things going on around us, all the other aspects of our lives. And that gives them a better flavor for whether or not it's truly motivated with a desire to serve God versus to elevate ourselves. Does that make sense? I think we should beware of that, and then beware of not having any fruit whatsoever, because that's just, you know, almost downright evidence. Matthew 13:22 says, now he who receives seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and deceitfulness of riches choke the word, he becomes unfruitful. Now, this is something I said before, but I think that living here in Southern California, like I said, we've lived in the Midwest, so I'm comparing those two things. But Southern California especially, we're a very wealthy, very prosperous area of the country. Even during the Depression, this is the only area, if you look at a map and they do it based upon the coloring, based upon the loss of monies, there was three areas, and this is one of the three areas in the United States that did not suffer during the Depression, nearly like anybody else. And in fact, they had a gain because of everybody moving out here and the growth of agriculture. It's a very prosperous area. And so we find ourselves, I do, very much trying to fight that desire to, compete with the Joneses next door, and trying to play down the importance of money and a bigger house and those kinds of things with our kids. And that is a huge deal with someone who is either new Christian, young Christian, growing up Christian. You know, Christ talks about how it's very, very hard for the rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven. It's not impossible, but again, it's a hard issue. So because of where we live, I point this out. And then, what does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? So the works are necessary. It's that balance again. of like being involved here at church. I don't know if any, have you guys had the opportunity for your kids to be involved in different things here? You know, it's good. There's a lot, and they allow, especially at the high school level, junior high level, the high school level, mostly high school level. You know, they look for the kids to get involved, which is really good. And actually, when I say involved, I mean not just go to youth group. I mean actually doing things like, you know, sound or helping on Wednesday night set up, that kind of stuff. So it's a good thing for the kids to do and get used to. But the last part that I fill in. Fruitless religion, faith without works, is evidence of fraudulent Christianity. I put there, you can fool some of the people, and this is something I wrote down. You can fool some of the people all the time. You can fool all the people some of the time. You can even fool yourself over time, but you can never fool God. And that's, you know, we do that. We have a tendency to do that. But God always knows. So ask yourself, are you being fraudulent? And do your children see regular evidence of the fruit of your salvation in your life? If you were to ask your kids, and I'm not recommending this, but if you're open to this, you know, it might be something you want to do. If you were to ask your kids, the ones that are old enough to give a, you know, solid answer, what they think of where you're at in your Christian walk, scale of 1 to 10, you know, 5 being... lukewarm, down, you know, below 5, and above kind of, you know, where would they put you? Just from their point of view, and why? Then ask them why. It's a tough question to ask, but it's very, very revealing of at least where they, hear my heart, I'm not asking you to advocate your authority to them. Does anybody, if you're in the business world, have you ever heard of a 360 review? What is that?
Oh,
do you remember?
No, I've heard of it. I haven't had it done to me.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, but in what he's talking to, if he hasn't had one, you know, it can be painful, but it's also very, very good. 360 review is you're given 3 different views at the year end. Your boss reviews you. You review yourself, and your peer or your subordinates review. Or peer, depending on what level of organization it is. So you're getting all this input from all around. Now, you're not advocating any of your responsibility to anybody. You're not giving away your authority. In this particular situation, what I'm suggesting is a possibility to help you in this particular area of parenting is like a 360 review. Look at yourself where you're at based upon the Scripture. Be honest with yourself, because the Scripture being God. I mean, be honest with yourself when you really look at things where you're at. And then ask your kids, ask your spouse, where do you think I'm at? Where do you think I can improve? Only for the sake of being a better parent, not advocating the authorities. That makes sense.
We had actually did something like that, I think.
You did?
When Chris first started, he said, I can't remember now, but he said, ask your children what they think is most important in your life.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah, that's right. Same kind of question. Because if you ask them that, they're revealing to you what they think your heart is.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to do it too. The last thing I have here is the respectable religion. But he who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. Then I have a number of verses here to talk about enduring till the end. So the last thing on there is there earthly gain for your walk in Christ? And I based upon the quote by C.H. Spurgeon. It was so great because I got stuff on hypocrisy from Stoddard, Edwards, Spurgeon, MacArthur. I mean, it got solid guys. There's a lot of good stuff out there on this particular topic. These are clear tests of imposter, suffering and pain and death for Christ's sake. For they will not be endured by mere pretenders. But in the silky, smooth age, when being religious is respectable, when following Christ is honored, and when godliness itself has become gain, it is doubly necessary that the minister should cry aloud and lift up his voice like a trumpet against his sin, the yeast of fairies, which is hypocrisy. That's C.H. Spurgeon in the 1800s. He could totally be talking about us now. You know? So when I say, is there earthly gain for your walk with Christ, does your walk with Christ cost you anything? In other words, do your children see that there's a cost? If not, okay, if there's no cost, I think that's true. It's just an economic deal. But if there's no cost, then how valuable is it? If it's free, then there's not the value to it. We live in a nation. I always heard a statistic, but I wanted to look it up and find it. The New York Times said in 1997 224 million people were Christians in the United States, 85%. There's no way 85% of people in the United States are Christians, but they think they are. So you're looking at that. You know, what does that mean? Let me throw this at you. Which state do you think they had ranked with the highest percentage population of Christians in?
North Carolina.
Carolina was on there, by the way.
Texas.
Utah.
Because that's what people think. They think they're Christian, but they're not. That gives you a picture of what's going on there, okay? These last application questions. Are you comfortable with any area in your life? I mean, comfortable with an area of your life. In other words, are you just comfortable sitting there? Who is Lord of each area of your life? Are you becoming fruitless? And then, how do you respond when true adversity strikes? When there's a meltdown, what do your kids see you do? That's huge. Because the reality is, that's when the rubber meets the road. I'm a Christian when everything's great. I'm a Christian when everything's hunky-dory. I'm a Christian when we have money. I'm a Christian when God's blessing us. I'm a Christian, on and on and on. What happens when God decides to test you like he tested Job? And your kids are watching. I'm not saying, you know, all the things that happened, Job happened to you. But theoretically speaking, or, you know, what happens then when God allows things in your life that cause you to actually grow, and that's what the growth process is, and your children are watching. What example you set. That's kind of that, just to think about. The Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits, doctrines of demons, speaking lies of hypocrisy, and having their own conscience here with a hot iron. That was the verse I used up above, and I go through several of them here. And then I quote from MacArthur, "False teachers can teach their hypocritical lies because their consciences have been desensitized, as if all the nerves that make them feel had been destroyed and turned into scar tissue by burning of demonic deception." What I'm trying to throw out here is there's a desensitization to sin over time if we're not careful. And that's where hypocrisy can creep in. Now, I want to finish this real quick story. On there it says, "Why was the Reverend interviewed unable to preach a solid gospel?" And then we'll end with this. Now, Tom Brokaw is the one that did that interview. Who he was interviewing was Ted Haggard. I don't know if you remember who Ted Haggard was. But Ted Haggard was the senior pastor of New Life Church and president of the National Association of Evangelicals. It's a huge, huge organization in the country. That's why he was the one being interviewed. There's 52 member denominations, coalition partners, and parachurch ministries. Okay? Just after 1 year after that interview, it was about 1 year, 2 or 3 months, Haggard was fired. I remember why.
He's having a homosexual affair.
Yeah, he's having a homosexual affair, and he had admitted to buying methamphetamine. Okay. And so you have this guy that's interviewed on television in front of the whole nation representing the mega church movement. He's the guy that said, you know, we don't teach, you know, the cost of sin. We teach that you can have a good life. But why was it that happened? Why, how was that allowed to happen?
Sin.
Yeah, hidden sin. That's exactly it. Hidden sin. Okay? And I know this from myself, from experience. I've walked through this where you have something, you're uncomfortable, you know it's sin, you don't want to talk about it, you shelter. God does not allow sin to stay in his people very long without exposure. So I'm asking you in the last part of this to think about your lives, and you know that's a great example on the big scale of what it can do. But are there areas in your lives as parents where you are hiding it, not because you're, you know, trying to protect this little sin over here from God, but you're scared? And maybe it is an area you're trying to protect. You know, just examine your hearts. We're stewards of our children. It's a great opportunity to produce godly young men and young women for the kingdom of God. But we have a tremendous responsibility in the way we discipline, the way we talk, the way we act, what we teach, you know, how we interact with each other, our spouses, all of it. So that's why I wanted to start with this, kind of get this out of the way. It's not a fun topic, per se, hypocrisy, but I think it's a necessary topic, especially with parenting. But like I said, going back to the beginning, in dealing with the kids I've dealt with the last 7 years, it's the number one thing they point to when they talk about Christianity and not wanting to be a Christian, not wanting to have anything to do with Christianity. It's hypocrisy. Any questions before we close? Yes, ma'am.
Earlier it said something about how we raise kids to see, you said the works versus, did you say the need for Christ, or?
You know what, I'm so sorry, I have no idea what I said. Was it back here?
Where they see righteousness, like self-righteousness.
Yeah, works, I was talking about works versus true righteousness. That's the difference. Because sometimes we do works, but we're doing it so that people can look at us and say we're good people. And sometimes we don't do work. That's that quote from Jonathan Edwards, is that balance in there.
Okay.
Steve, would you be willing to close this prayer?